All right. Well, welcome to the session. I already forget what session we're in, but vegetable crop management, right? Vegetable crop management. And thank you for those of you who are being stalwart supporters and coming out for these presentations, because I know most of the people are probably on their way home. So I am the moderator for the session, and I'm also the first speaker. And I think in the interest of time, I'm probably just going to be sitting up here for those speakers. I'm going to do my best to give you a warning in terms of time, so just make sure you look this way in addition to out. All right, so the first presentation for the session, is the presentation I'll be giving, is Grafting Increases Yield of Watermelon in a Cold Climate. And the main author for this presentation is actually Rob Brown, who is a farmer, and he is the farmer at Flat Top Farm in Anchorage, Alaska. And he is a Western SARE grant recipient, and so this is his farmer grant for Western SARE. So it's my honor to be presenting this, and then I'm his technical advisor. So I don't know how many of you are participating in the farmer rancher the farmer grants for SARE, but it's something that if you haven't considered, you really should, because it's fantastic to be a technical advisor on those grants. You really get to see some farming operations, and you get to implement your research in a farming environment. All right, so let's look at Alaska. Anybody from Alaska? Oh, yay. Okay, well, you're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not from Alaska. I'm from Washington, but this is from Rob. So just looking at Alaska and trying to understand, you know, why are we trying to grow watermelons? Why are we trying to grow vegetables in Alaska? So more than 95% of the $2 billion spent annually on food purchases in Alaska are imported via boat or plane. Grocery stores have a maximum of 2 weeks' supply. Prices are very high for fresh produce, and this really limits consumption in rural areas. High tunnels modify climate to enable local fruit and vegetable production, and crops such as watermelon, which is a crop we're working on, require additional strategies for successful production. So looking at the price of fresh fruits and vegetables, this is a watermelon, and the price there is $70.78 Canadian. So this is right across the border. It's basically the same latitude as Anchorage. But when I say high prices, when we say high prices, we mean it. So that watermelon costs $54 at the local food store there in Nunavut, Canada. It's a 50-pound watermelon. So you can see why prices limit consumption. So basically, there's a real problem with nutrition and availability, access to fresh fruits and vegetables in Alaska, and certainly among Native communities. So there's a real need here for us as horticulturalists, for scientists, and for farmers to explore opportunities for production for local markets. So high tunnels in Alaska, the USDA has awarded $4 million in contracts and grants, 679 high tunnels in Alaska. That's actually more tunnels than anywhere else in the Northwest. And the reason for that is because of the need for fresh fruit and vegetable production in order to enable consumption. However, high tunnels in Alaska pose some severe concerns. So very high winds, high snows, and then deep ground freezing is a real problem. So being able to construct a tunnel to sustain the freezing, thawing, fracturing. And that was Rob's tunnel, by the way. So the objective of our study was to evaluate production in a high tunnel, in that high tunnel structure of two watermelon cultivars, Blacktail Mountain, which is actually a selection out of Idaho in the mountain area of Idaho, and then Marmolodny, which is a Russian selection. And it was grafted onto a cold-tolerant rootstock, Tetsukabutu, and Rob did all of this work himself, and again, this is part of his Western SARE grant. So grafted watermelon, his production, he seeded Blacktail Mountain, Marmolodny, and Tetsukabutu on 10th of June 2017 for this study. I have to say that this was his third planting, and he lost his first and second plantings, and you'll see his growing rooms. Everything is in the house. So the weather is such that you can't really rely on being able to get out of the house with heavy snowfalls and with heating and everything else. It's much more economical for him to grow everything in the house. So I'll show you the grow rooms and everything that's in his bedrooms. He's converted bedrooms basically into grow rooms. So he had some locally produced seed in those growth chambers, and they were infected, and they infected his entire planting. So he cleaned all of that out, and it was only the third planting that he was successful. So we're a little bit later than we had hoped for to do this, but This is what we had to work with. And so then he did a hole insertion grafting on 17th of June, and anybody else familiar with grafting, that's not the grafting technique that I recommend. We do the one cotyledon, but he could not successfully do the one cotyledon, but he was successful the hole insertion, so that's what he went with. So these are the grow rooms, and I apologize, I took these photographs. So this is really hard to see. The grow out room on the left is basically a bedroom converted to a growth room in his basement. It's a daylight basement. So everything is surrounded by foil, and then he's got this very intensive lighting system. And I jokingly say this is what happens when marijuana becomes legal. These systems are all well developed. They're well known. They're well managed. Everybody knows how to do this, and now we all know. So basically, all of this technology exists, and some people know how to use it very well. So here's Rob on the right here. This is his healing chamber. So again, all very self-contained. This is in the family room in the basement. And again, this is because he's heating the house, and he doesn't have to heat any outside unit. So there's a lot of expense saved by having all of this in his house. Then these are his seedlings. So the seedlings are on the left, and then the healing is on the right. I should have mentioned that he's using a dry fog humidifier to get the moisture up to the 100% humidity that we use for healing grafted plants, and he's having very good success. So the experimental design was a randomized complete block, 6 plants per plot, transplanted into raised beds covered with mulch. We're doing everything we can to raise temperatures. It's an unheated greenhouse, but so the mulch is there for temperature, and I'll show you some temperature data here in a little bit. He's hand pollinating within the cultivar. So again, he's got 2 cultivars here, so he's hand pollinating within the cultivar, and he's doing a really good job. So soil temperatures in the plots were 60 degrees Fahrenheit on the 24th of August, so it's pretty cold. There's just no doubt about it. Food were harvested on the 28th of September. However, they were immature, so the bricks were 5 to 6, where we would have expected 10 to 12. And this is because of the basically 1 month delay on the seeding date. And we're repeating the experiment this year, and he's completely changing his, the varieties he's going to use. He's getting away from Tetsukabutu, going to Flexi-4 this year, because Tetsukabutu did not perform quite as well as he had hoped for. So it's one of the challenges in terms of doing research. We're not going to be able to publish any of this because he's changing everything, but the reality is we're really doing the work so that he can produce watermelon for his market. So that's, you have to go with that. So here is the yield data, and again, understanding that the fruit is immature. So Blacktail Mountain on Tetsukabutu, you can see yield per plot was 14.5 pounds per plot. Marmoladny was 44.5 pounds per plot. So that is by all just an outstanding cultivar, and he's only going to be using Marmoladny this year. And I should say that he's got demonstration plots in the botanical gardens, and several other growers have also partnered with him where he's putting plants out on their farms as well. So just looking at the yield per plot, looking at the mean number of fruit per plot, so Marmoladny at 7.75 fruit per plot compared to, you know, it's twice as much and more than the non-grafted plants. Just look at those non-grafted plants. And then the average weight per fruit, again, grafting has really led to an increase in number of fruit and the weight per fruit. So grafting has really worked well for him in terms of increasing his watermelon production. So this is just gives you an idea of the challenge that he has and all the growers up in Alaska have in general. These are soil temperatures, and you can see the soil temperature, and it's hard to see the numbers, I realize, but on the far left there is July 15th, and it goes through September 25. Took us about a month to get the system up and operating. Again, we had to purchase this. That's the other thing. If you're purchasing supplies in Alaska, you have to pay a lot of money to get it shipped, and it takes a lot of time to get it delivered. So, and then you're waiting for your USDA funds, and that takes a lot of time. Everything's, you know, just very time sensitive. So it took a while for us to get it all set up there. But you can see that the temperatures, they peaked at about 70, 73 degrees in the plots under the plastic mulch, and then they went down to 50, 55 there by the end of the season. So it's pretty cold, and this is in the high tunnel. Air temperatures in the tunnel, they peaked at about 93. And you can see that there again, about July 14th there is that date, and then going down to October, temperatures are down to 65 by October. So And through the main part of the growing season, August, they're down below 70 degrees. And so it's challenging for watermelon. And so why does he grow watermelon? It's because of that $55 per fruit value that, you know, is that's what it's selling for locally. So any fruit that he can produce, it's going to be cost effective for him. Light transmission, and the reason I'm showing you this data is I'm going to show you some, just a couple of slides, and I'm not going to go into detail about exactly his materials, but he has to have a very particular material in order to have that high tunnel in his environment. And so one of the questions we had was what was the light transmission in his area. So this is light transmission in PAR. It's relatively low overall, but it's better than we thought it might be with the material that he's using. So the conclusions from this study was that grafted plants increased fruit production in South Central Alaska compared to the non-grafted plants, and he had more than 3 times the fruit number and 6 times the total fruit weight. There was a difference between the two cultivars, and Marmoladny definitely was by far the better cultivar, more than 2 times the fruit number and 3 times the weight than Blacktail Mountain. And again, just looking at the grafted versus non-grafted comparison, the grafting absolutely worked for him. So just a quick update of where we are in 2018. He's in the this experiment is again in the ground. He is just growing a Marmoladny, and he's changed his rootstock to Flexivore. Flexivore is supposed to have some better cold tolerance, so that's where we are. Transplanting date, you can see, is much on par with what it was in 2017, so it's still too late. So he's really got to figure out his grafting, transplant production end of things. So that's something that he's continuing to work on. He does a lot of outreach and talks. Again, this is a Western Sare project, and so that's one of the expectations, is that he's telling other growers in his community about his project. So I just have a couple of slides, and I just have a couple of minutes to do this, but I wanted to give you some kind of view on what it's like to build a high tunnel in Alaska. So the photo on the far left is drill stem. It's 10-foot drill stem that is pounded into the ground, and this is what supports the high tunnel. And you've got to get below the frost line. Because of the frost jacking that happens. Otherwise, everything just gets shifted up, and so you've got to get below that frost line. So it's an extensive process to put a high tunnel in this area. And there's a lot more detail here. And this is all, by the way, we're writing up a document on this and about building a high tunnel in a cold zone like this. And then what I really want to show you here is the product on the far right, which is this the cover. Well, I'm sorry. This is the baseboard is then fused to the drill stem. So it's welded on to keep the high tunnel structure attached to those 10-foot posts that are in the ground. And then this is the product that I want to show you. This is solar wrap. This is what covers the high tunnel. And this is what gives it the strength to take 10 feet of snow and 100 plus miles of winds on a constant basis. And this is really what makes the high tunnels possible. So it's a product out of Germany. I've never seen it before personally, but Rob is a really outstanding grower, and he's done an amazing job on this project. He's done all of this research himself and brought it all together on the SARE grant. So if you have any questions, Rob is definitely the person to talk to. That's flattopfarm at gmail.com. And this is a photograph that I took when I was up visiting the plots last year. So let's see here. I have 2 minutes for questions. Right, so the question is, have we worked out any of the budget? It's part of the grant project is to do the budget. Again, maybe you missed it at the beginning, it was an NRCS project, so NRCS cost shares, but you have to put up the money up front, and then they do a payback over time, and they don't pay it all back. So there is an incentive there in terms of getting money back, but they certainly don't pay all of these costs. Trying to think here. No, I'm sorry. So I'm in the high tunnel workshop, and in that workshop in this afternoon, I have the budget for how much this all costs. It's definitely not going to pay in the short run, so anybody doing this is going to have a long-term plan and how to earn the money back. He's thinking that if he can get, I don't know, $25 a watermelon, compared to the, and for any of you who missed it at the beginning, watermelons sell for what did I say, $55 is I think what that slide showed. So watermelons, fresh watermelons sell on the local market for $55 for a fruit. So if he can get $25, he's probably, you can do the math. He'll do the math. Any other questions? Yep. Yes, it does.
He's been pleased with that. I've seen that before, but I don't know anyone who's ever used it.
Yeah, so it does look like bubble wrap. It's rated to 125 pounds per foot snow load rating. That's what it's rated to. It's 17 mil. It's got an R value of 1.72, so that's its insulation factor. 100 miles per hour winds. He's at 106 miles per hour winds is what he gets on a regular basis. 70 miles an hour is what he gets usually, and then they go up to 100. It has a 15 to 25 year, it's got a 10-year UV warranty and a 15 to 25 year lifespan. He's got it for 3 years, and it looks great.
And so that almost $8,000, is that for a 30 by 96 tunnel?
Yep. And I'm sorry, I'm out of time, and I don't want to go over time, so we're going to, thank you very much.